This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
You're listening to Richer and the Mailman here on Place to Be Nation Network. And now your hosts, Josh Richer and Jeff Machado. When you're on a holiday, you can't find the words to say all the things that come to you.
The part of our show, Mrs. Hitmaker, Miss Tammy Wynette.
Sometimes it's hard to be a woman, giving all your love to just one man. You have that time.
And welcome to this week's episode of Richer and the Mailman. I'm Josh Richer, and right next to me is Jeff Machado, the mailman.
What's up?
So, this was a big episode about seeing where the women of the show fell, including Holly. That was a big scene there with Holly. Really starting to see where their allegiances lie going into this tailspin that we're about to enter.
Yeah, they're kind of just like, bam, this person knows. Bam, this person knows.
Yeah.
And it's a very wifey episode.
Very wifey.
Very wife-centric.
Very jarring, too. I felt like I really felt every time we were in another scene, I was like, oh, my God.
There wasn't a lot to laugh about this episode.
No. There was no stories about pie-eating contests in space.
Nope. There was no Badger comic relief.
Actually, no. I can think of a thing that I laughed about, but we'll get to that. So how was your weekend?
My weekend was pretty good. You might be surprised to hear this, but I delivered some mail.
Oh, they're still delivering on Saturdays?
They're still delivering on Saturdays.
What?
Yeah, I delivered some mail on Saturday, and then it was your birthday on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Big
How
33. From the glass lined tanks of Old Latrobe, we tend to this premium beer for your enjoyment. Etc., 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 33.
Oh, that's good. Also, Larry Bird.
Larry Bird. The year that Jesus lived to.
My friend Parker once said, when he turned 33, he said, boobs on top of boobs. And also Peter Griffin chins on top of Peter Griffin chins. Balls on top of balls? Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, but it wasn't that kind of party this weekend, unfortunately. That would have been a story to tell. But, I mean, you brought the stories, I think. We went to stories I wanted to go, or actually I didn't. It's not even like I really thought of this, but I think the old, number one PIC there, the old JR, kind of, got the idea in my head that maybe going to see UFC at this wing bar that's down the street from where we all grew up would be a good idea. And it was, I'd say. Had a really good time. But you had a different experience to me, I think.
Yeah, I just wanted to come out and support my best friend, get some good wings, and watch some UFC. All you Place to Be Nationers out there, you should all be like much more into the UFC than I am. I don't really know much.
Yeah, neither one of us know anything really. I can't tell you who won any of the matches.
But the thing about JR, the captain as I call him, is he's kind of like a Svengali.
Oh, he's a total Svengali.
Or Svengali.
Yeah, that was actually a point that came up multiple times in that.
It's like, oh, maybe for your birthday we should go to this bar that's showing the UFC and you guys could, Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. What's funny about it, the weird topic to get on, but as I think about it over the course of my years, even when we used to do the whole little backyard wrestling that me and him would do, and set up scandalous type of turn of events where we'd screw people over and, like, his cousin, Matt. I think about it, I'm like, he's always been doing it. But it's like, once I became aware of it, now it's just kind of like, well, I realize how complicit I am with when I'm like, oh, he's doing it, but that's cool.
Yeah, he's like a whisperer of people.
Oh, he's a whisperer. It's a total, it's like, yes, yes.
By the way,
so
those
what do you make
videos,
what do you whisper to you?
Those videos of backyard wrestling need to be up on the site.
Well, I know one thing they're doing is they are working on some YouTube channel that's going to be popping off. Hear that? You hear what I said there?
Popping off?
I think the kids don't use it anymore, but they did like 3 or 4 years ago, so it's undated.
Gangsters use it.
Maybe.
When shit pops off.
Oh, yeah, when the block's hot, right?
When the block's hot.
The YouTube channel is probably going to be popping off. They already got some good stuff on there, but I definitely think they're going to be putting some of the old wrestling on there. But I know some other things that's probably going to end up on there, which is what you did at the Wing Place, Jeff. So okay. What did Justin make you do? Tell the doctor.
Well, hey, if you guys want to get some wings, go to Boneheads in West Warwick.
It's great.
They're the best. They've got great wings, but they have, as most reputable wing places do, have a wing challenge, which is like the hottest of the hot. They actually chemically engineer it with like habanero peppers to make it as hot as possible. And so Justin was like, oh, you know, Jeff can do it. Jeff can do anything. He's the mailman, et cetera, et cetera. He did the cinnamon challenge. So
you did do the cinnamon challenge. Like a champ, by the way.
Like a champ. That was like a piece of cake, whatever. But they only do the challenge like once a month, so they didn't even have the hottest sauce available. So the waitress says, hey, how about the next sauce down on the list? And I'm like, yeah,
which
sure,
wasn't even on their list of sauces, I want to point out.
It was not even
the
on
Hell's
the menu.
Bells.
The Hell's Bells wings. It was off the menu, and I took them like a champ. They were very hot.
You did. I had one. You didn't have all seven. Let's not.
I had six out of the seven.
You could have finished that one. That was hot.
I could have finished it. I gave one to my birthday boyfriend over here. But it was
very hot. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, it was like kind of an intentional, unintentional combo of words. Someday it would be my real boyfriend. But anyway, I finished it. It wasn't too hot, but it was enough to make me cry.
Now, yeah, you definitely... and then there was a... Did you nosebleed during that one or when they brought out like the actual next step below the competition one?
So well, yeah, exactly. See, I had just gotten proud enough of myself that I finished this step below that I'm like, oh, I can totally do this challenge. It was like a prep for the challenge. And the guy's like, well, I'm going to show this guy. He brings out one wing, one single wing with the hottest sauce to prepare me for the challenge. And it was about 50 times hotter than the ones that I just had.
Oh man, so
and that one wing was so hot that it actually made my nose bleed.
Yeah, that was scary. Like, because I'm not gonna lie, just seeing that made me go, "Oh, that's what spicy foods can actually do to our body if we like really aren't careful."
You're not supposed to ingest something that hot.
No, you're not.
Your body is not prepared
for
it.
But yet you did because that's the type of asshole that you are.
I am that type of asshole. I'm gonna do it just because they tell me that I couldn't do it.
So,
in case Boneheads ever comes out with an actual prize for finishing the challenge, I will do it.
Oh, you're going to die.
I will be there the first time it happens. So anybody that wants to show up and thinks that I can't do it, I will also bet you because I'm a compulsive gambler. I once bet somebody $10 that I could see 10 red cars drive by before one white car. Lost that bet. But the point is I made it.
Did you guys give odds on that?
So if anybody out there thinks that I can't eat those seven hottest wings in the world... Put your money where your mouth is, my friends.
Are you soliciting gambling over the internet, or?
Yeah, because the FBI is totally monitoring.
You're right. No one listens to this show. Yeah, it was a fun weekend. I had a good time. I drank a lot, but I didn't hit that. I didn't hit that blackout place. Me and Jeff and some other people went out earlier this week too for a concert. This band Baroness, they're awesome.
Baroness, also, I recommend them.
Royal Thunder, which is also awesome. And that
smoking
night,
hot lead singer.
I didn't smoking hot, and she's really got like the sultry voice. It's
very
great.
Sultry.
Yeah, that was Royal Thunder. Check them out, definitely. But. We went out that night. I didn't really get to eat a lot before we left. There was confusion with meeting up and stuff like that. And I kind of just left for my night way earlier than I thought, I believe in. And then, so I get there and then it's just like, I've seen tons of people I haven't seen in a while and I'm just slugging them back. And I probably had like too many drinks that I should have in that span. And later on that night, I apparently... passed out a little bit, woke up, and then didn't remember what I did during that time.
That was
but
a weird night.
This night was – Saturday night was great. I had a full what do you call that word when you, like, know exactly what's going on?
Cognizance.
Cognizance. I had full cognizance that night. There was no blacking out. There was no browning out. It was, like, a perfect little birthday that I learned at 33 how to not completely –
What birthday was it? What birthday was the John Lester birthday? Do we remember that one?
Oh, that was
where you were puking and peeing off your deck, and you left
2007.
Our friend Mark a 5-minute long voicemail that just was, you saying John Lester over.
That was 2007. That was an event. You know, 27, man. That's one you want to try to really go all out because you know Kurt Cobain and Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin.
Yeah, it's a tough year, 27.
Yeah, so you're trying to survive, just trying to get by. Now, from here on in, I think we're going to get into Breaking Bad here. Now, feel free to skip ahead, and when you start, if you're like avoiding this podcast because maybe you aren't caught up on Breaking Bad, just skip ahead about like a half hour, and we'll probably be talking about some other shit. Maybe you might have to. There might be spoilers there too, but we'll warn you, and you'll be able to kind of check it out. But from here on in, there's going to be full spoilers for Breaking Bad, up to and including the episode that just aired last night, Buried. Which was episode, what, is this 10? Episode 10 of, the, of season
2.
5.
8 plus 2 is 10.
8 plus 2. So, yeah, that was a, you know, as from our music, the way we started off, a lot about the women this week.
Yes. We got to know that what they're going to do this season is they're actually going to show, because they're not going to make it seem like a plotting process where Hank finds out at the end of the first half of the season and he's going to like try to get all his pieces in place. It's like, no, like this minute, this is happening, and it's like minute to minute, kind of like the movie Nick of Time starring Johnny Depp. Remember that movie where they had a clock?
No.
They had a clock on the screen because the entire movie was the 1 hour and 40 whatever minutes. And this is how long Johnny Depp had to save his kid.
Oh, so it's kind of like 24.
Yeah, it was exactly like 24. It was 24 before, as movie form. With
so
Johnny
you're
Depp
saying that this season of Breaking Bad, this last half, is pretty much like the clock is just ticking and they're just moving fast.
Yeah, it's like Walt gets out of the garage, and does he even get to drive home? No. Hank calls up Skyler.
That was great, too. But I read actually on a recap, they kind of called them like gunslingers, the way they stared each other down. And then the garage door closed, and he feverishly tried to call Skyler, but
yeah. So
Hank
instead of shooting them with a six shooter, he called. They both called the same woman.
That was great. I actually thought that was. I was about to look up Nick of Time, then I realized, you know what? I don't even care. I don't care.
I basically just told you the entire movie. Johnny Depp's daughter gets kidnapped. He has an hour and 40 minutes to find her. He finds her.
That's a good movie. I like that.
So, let's just go back to Breaking Bad so I don't go on a tangent about Johnny Depp's career after Nick of Time. Because Nick of Time was the peak of Johnny Depp's career.
That's another episode. Tune in to next time where we break down Johnny Depp's career, which is
Richard
funny.
Richard and the Mailman break down
Johnny
Depp's
career. Which is
really
funny because a mutual friend of ours on Facebook, as like I don't know if it was a joke or not last night, but wrote like, RIP Johnny Depp. And I got it this morning. I went, I'm like, is anybody else saying, is Johnny Depp dead?
I saw that. First of all, happy birthday week, Bob.
Yes.
R.I.P. Bob's not listening. But R.I.P. Johnny Depp, and I figured for sure he was dead. The guy smokes like 4 packs of cigarettes a day.
No, but Johnny...
He's not dead, though.
Johnny Depp is not dead, and neither is...
I think he was just referring to him being Tonto in The Lone Ranger.
Oh.
It's like, all right, this is the end. This is the end of me caring about Johnny Depp. He was just Tonto? What, are you kidding me?
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't see that he was... Did I miss it? Whatever. Forget it. But, so, we're moving really fast. And it's a good point you make because it's actually... We're in the second half of the season. So, Hank didn't know the entire first half of the last season. Finds out. And then we're just sprinting. Like, we've been saying this week in, week out. But it's just like... It's very sudden. And very... I feel like it's been very jarring how it is. Just like... Having to deal with now having this conversation that Walt and Skyler have when they go to the restaurant there, the coffee shop.
Hank and Skyler,
I'm sorry.
See, I don't know about you and all the other Breaking Bad fans out there, but I spent this entire bunch of months in between the two halves of the seasons wondering, how is Hank going to go back to the party? How is Walt going to find out that Hank knows?
You said that last time.
How is Hank going to tell Marie? How is Skyler going to find out that Hank knows? And like,
is Walter Jr. going to find out?
They don't even care. Like, they just all, like, in the 5 minutes, this is, he just calls her.
Yeah.
He tells them, he takes the GPS thing, and everybody knows immediately. It's like so fast.
It's just spiraled. It was like immediately Hank went and obviously told Marie. Because later on we get after their meeting with Skyler and Hank, where you know she pretty much chooses her side. He gets Marie there and to try to talk to Skyler. Now, going back to like to that restaurant scene, like how did you feel about that? Like that was a crucial moment because Hank is now telling Skylar that he knows. He tells her on the phone, which you were complaining about earlier off tape, that you didn't like that we didn't get to hear that conversation.
Well, yeah, because you get to see Walt try to call Skylar, and then they cut to her in the car wash and her cell phone's ringing and she's obviously already on the phone with Hank. So we get kind of we get deprived of her talking to Hank, saying, you know, I know Walter is a meth cook. Do you know anything about this? All you get to see her say is okay, and she has a stunned look on her face. The same look that will be on her face for the entire episode.
Yes.
So, like, you don't know, like, why wouldn't she just deny knowing, you know? What did he say to her? But, you know, that's the writer's choice. I kind of accept it. And she goes and meets him, and she prepares the whole thing, and you get to – there's that kind of standoff in the restaurant. Not a Chinese restaurant.
No, I thought it was. I actually wrote on the viewing notes Chinese restaurant. There was some sort of porcelain something when they walked in, one of the shots, and I'm like, oh, it's a Chinese restaurant. And then they sit down. I'm like, this is not like any –
I think you just saw an Asian in the restaurant.
Oh, no. I am not –
you immediately assumed – that they couldn't possibly be at
no,
like a normal
Asians
cafe.
Asians don't go to coffee shops.
Anyway, they're at the coffee shop, and Hank is trying to be calm and trying to make her feel better. And we kind of get to see that, you know what, Skylar is pretty smart.
Oh, yeah. Skylar
was
really
she's on the
there.
Same level as Hank and Walter, and he's just kind of almost like, what was the phrase that I was thinking of? There's a sexual one. He was doing too much too fast.
Oh, he was chomping at the bit.
Chomping at the bit.
I don't know if that's sexual, but it could be. We could say a man is chomping at the bit for some tang.
Well, the sexual one I was thinking of is blowing your load.
Blowing your load. Yeah, that's a good one. You should have said that. This is not PG.
But I didn't want to say that, but I just had to say it to
explain. Shooting jizz in his pants.
He was chomping at the bit to try to get her to just admit everything and say,
yeah,
everything's going to be okay, I'm married to your sister.
I think he thought
yada, yada,
less
yada
of her right there. And I think that's a part of why it's still where, even though Hank is like in the right here as far as like trying to take down this man who's killed all these people, okay, he thinks that the people that he's dealing with are a lot dumber than he is. And
yeah.
I think that he thought Skylar is a woman. And because he doesn't have any of the knowledge of anything that she has done in this, he just thinks that he can bully her around into giving a confession because that way it will go smoother. Now, she asks for a lawyer after that or says, should I ask for a lawyer? And he starts being like, well, we don't want to get lawyers in the way, setting up roadblocks, I believe he said.
Yeah, that was the key moment in Skylar knowing that Hank is not somebody that she's going to want to deal with because she says, I want a lawyer. He says, no, you don't want a lawyer. And then she realizes that's not a normal law enforcement thing to say. This guy's just trying to get Waltz, and he's trying to use me.
Yeah.
And forget it. I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, and she just clamps up right there. Well, I think what does she say? Like she finds out what he knows pretty much, which is great. You know, because the way he's asking, she figures he doesn't know anything. He needs to have a lot of blanks filled in right there. And I think also in that scene. What does she say? Like, arrest me? Arrest me? Are you arresting me? Am I under arrest?
Am I under arrest?
Classic.
Classic Skylar. When I think of Skylar,
she's brilliant. She's just as smart as Walt, I think.
Well, I think that's part of the reason why she's so willing to, because previous to this phone conversation and to this meeting at the coffee shop / Chinese restaurant,
whatever it is,
she was thinking, Hank is my friend, and he's somebody that I can trust. But then once he confronts her with it and says, you don't need a lawyer. We're just going to go public. Everything's going to be fine. I'm going to take care of you. You're my wife's sister. Then you can kind of see why her and Walt got together in the first place. Because she kind of has the same pride, you know? She's like, you know what? This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not going to, like, bring me down just because he says he knows things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. She's able to assess the situation and actually see it for what it is. Like,
she knows that he doesn't have any hard evidence. She knows that she has more to lose by talking to him than going and talking to Walt first. and she's just kind of honestly a little bit pissed off, even though she's like deathly afraid that all of her world is coming crashing down around her.
Oh, yeah, she's wicked scared, but I think she's trying to stay level-headed and trying to do what, you know, she wants to keep the money. I find that, and she wants Walt to not, she wants her family to stay together. She doesn't want to get torn down in this whole thing and have her kids go to Marie and Hank and just lose her children, especially Holly, which was also, who was also a very important part of this episode.
Yeah, this is a very interesting, like, hour in all these people's lives. Because you get the sense that even though she knows that Hank knows, she figures maybe some kind of circumstance can happen where everything will be okay, where he won't be able to prosecute Walt.
Yeah.
Where I won't have to go to jail. Maybe Walt will, I don't know, die or something. She just figures...
Well, previously she had said she was waiting for him to die. But I definitely think that something has changed once he quit, and she knew that he quit making meth and that he was out of the business. Which is really actually the sad part, is because who knows what would have happened going forward here in their relationship and before Hank knew, and now they were forced to like start having to deal with this. Now, what do you think this says about Skylar? Do you think it says that Skylar... I think she's like extremely loyal, but do you think this is more of a self-preservation type of move to start protecting Walt?
Yeah, it's definitely mostly about self-preservation, because if you go back to when she initially discovered what Walt was doing to make all the money, and she decided, and he like called her bluff. He said, "Go to the cops," and she realized all the reasons she couldn't go to the cops as he was like saying them to her. She didn't want, like, her children to be disgraced, for her sister and her brother-in-law to be disgraced. So she figured, okay, well, maybe we can work around this somehow. And now she's thinking the same thing. Like, there's...
Yeah, she's not panicking. Like, Walt starts to do a little bit as he realizes that Hank has talked to Skylar, and he kind of freaks out a little bit.
That was very interesting how Walt assumed that Skylar had ratted him out.
Oh, yeah. Well, why wouldn't he? She basically said, "I hate your guts," like, not that long ago. Mm. You know, like, obviously things are still tense there. I don't think they're having any relations in the marital bed anytime soon. So,
but that's not addressed either. What about the marital bed? Have they been having sex? They're sitting around having dinner and breakfast together.
I would say in most situations, two people sharing a bed who have been married probably would be. But considering all the insane bullshit that has gone on in between them in the past year, I'm thinking no. I think she fucked Ted and said and whispered it to him, just like, which was actually very sexy.
It was very sexy.
The message kind of harsh.
But that's the thing. Skylar got to have sex with Ted for that arc of episodes. What about Walt? Has Walt just not had sex
Walt's,
this whole time?
Walt's thing that he's doing that is the equivalent of having sex with Ted is cooking meth and killing people and becoming the empire, building an empire of meth.
He could have just had sex with Ted.
He could have just had sex with people, and we would have saved a lot of time. He also would be dead because the cancer would have killed him. But that's another thing. That's another thing that we got to learn in this Asian Starbucks here was that...
Asian Starbucks, yes.
Asian Starbucks, where all the Asians hang out and have coffee. We got to learn Hank relayed the information and to Skylar that Walt has cancer, which Skylar didn't know at that point that he has it again. Which I think, obviously, that plays a part in this episode a lot because, well, as we alluded to, Walt kind of goes crazy when he finds out that Jesse's missing. After that last episode when Jesse's running around throwing his money out, they had the teaser at the beginning with him, like, on a playground, which is a great scene, laying there. And we'll talk about Jesse a little bit in a little bit. But Jesse's missing. He thinks that Skylar's telling Hank everything, pretty much, and running into the arms of Marie and them. And he's freaking out. So he has all his big, giant pile of money that is uncountable, that she could never count, ever, or launder. And he has, what is it, Bill Burr, and then the other... You know, the comedian Bill Burr there playing one of the security guards that works for Saul has him go take the money, put it in barrels. Is his name Huel?
Wait, in real life?
In real life, his name is Bill Burr.
The black guy or the white guy?
The white guy. The red hair. Okay. The guy looks like he's from Boston.
Yeah, I saw the black guy's character's name is Huell.
Huell. Well, Huell and Bill Burr's character, he has to move the money, well, load the money up, and he moves it out into the desert. So he's really freaking out. And what we see there is that he basically, like, kills his body, moving this all by himself. And then he goes back and he passes out when he walks in the house after one of the more stylized scenes. They had, like, a whole series of scenes in that little segment with him out in the
desert.
Again,
directed by Bryan Cranston.
No, it wasn't directed by Bryan Cranston this time.
It wasn't?
Nope.
Are you sure?
I am positive.
Well, Josh looks that up. Let me go over my problem with that sequence, which is...
Well, I thought it was beautiful.
Do you have any idea how long it would take to bury that much money? To bury, what was it, like 8 barrels worth of money? Do you know how big of a hole that would have to be? It takes one gravedigger, like, a day to dig 1 6-foot grave for one coffin.
Really?
Yes. Go outside and try to dig a hole. That is such a stupid scene. Like, that's what he does. He drives out by himself. Why doesn't he take the two guys?
Actually, that's where I thought the humor was. Well, he didn't take the two guys because he doesn't trust anyone. He's Walter White, and he doesn't trust anyone at this point. Not Saul, not those two guys. That thing that he says to him pretty much illustrated it. When he goes over, looks it over, and goes, close enough. Like,
yeah,
he assumes that they stole.
Of course he does. They stole a bunch of money.
Why would he show them the location?
First of all, has anybody looked at the storage unit and measured visually, based on the camera angle, the height of the cash pile and the width times the amount of bands of $100 bills? Like, do we know what kind of money we're talking about here?
No. We don't.
Is it more than Adam Sandler's net worth?
I have no idea what Adam Sandler's net worth, and I'm not looking that up. But I assume that it is, because we were told that he can make, like, $300 million from that. Right?
Yeah, it was, you know, him and Lydia, they really cleaned up. Are we talking about Adam Sandler?
No, I'm talking about Walter White.
I'm pretty sure Adam Sandler made $300 million from Waterboy. What? Which is just him going, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-
it would take a long time for a man of his size and stature to
And dying of cancer.
I agree. Okay, but you suspend your belief when you watch a television show sometimes.
And how soft is the earth in New Mexico, in the New Mexico desert? Is it that soft? You can just dig with one shovel?
It's the softest ever. Actually, I've seen Arizona dirt when a friend got married and they had some weird unifying ritual, some pagan ritual or something. I don't know.
Was it red?
No. Yeah, it was very red, actually. They put the dirt from where they live now and where they're from all together layered in a mason jar. Like, they brought that at their wedding. That was part of the ceremony. It's pretty cool, but that dirt was very red, so...
All right, even assuming that he drove out there with enough materials to survive for, like, 2 to 3 days that it would take to dig this hole, couldn't he just have Saul convert it into electronic funds somehow?
No, it needs to be laundered. It's just cash. That's all it is at this point. It needs to be laundered to be put into... I need to show you how laundering works, and that would cut this. But that's beside the point. So Walt goes out there and he does this, and he comes home, and he pretty much falls apart, okay, in the bathroom. And he has this scene where he's taking off his clothes and getting in the shower, and she's, like, yelling to him, Walt, and it was very much like Gus in Box Cutter when he was walking in, and Walt was just stammering and hammering, and Gus didn't say anything at all. And just walked over and took off his clothes, his plain clothes, slowly, and then put on the other clothes before he killed. Who's that? That was Victor. Oh, poor Victor.
Poor Victor.
Every time I'm going to be sad. But
although, speaking of a quick aside about the box cutter episode, I'm pretty sure Gus could have just killed Jesse, and Walt would have had no choice but to just keep doing what he was doing. Right. Walt would have been like, okay, I just sliced Jesse's throat.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, but the thing was, Victor had been seen at the place, and he...
Yeah, but
he popped his head in. That's what the point was of that episode.
If you're seen at a place, and they show you a rap sheet, and they say, I recognize this guy, what difference does it make if he's alive or dead?
Because then he can't talk, which we learned from this whole episode. Or, like, episodes ago.
Like, Victor was really going to talk.
He could. People went there in jail. Like, okay, so now we're questioning the motives. Okay, that's not, the point is, he has a scene very reminiscent of that. He passes out, and he wakes up, and he looked like he was a cancer patient when he woke up. Apparently, he was out for 5 hours, Skylar told him. But she nursed him. And I think that was that point, like, humanized her big time. And really kind of was like, well, this is where she is. Her allegiance is to Walt. It's for self-preservation, but I think she also cares about him greatly because she does love him. And she realizes that he pretty much is dying now. This is it. It's not coming back.
Yeah, it's a difference between wishing somebody was dead and actually seeing them die. There's a big difference.
Yeah. That's huge, and they've been through. And I think she actually maybe sees that he went through that for them. I think in some way she really does get it, even though she was afraid and he was killing everyone and generally being a bad man. I think that she actually, you know, like I said before, he's out and she enjoys that, and she just doesn't want him to go to jail before he dies.
He didn't actually kill anyone who wasn't a bad guy, though.
No. That's a whole nother thing.
I mean, he was responsible for that plane crash, but they don't know that. Only Walt knows that.
Yes.
But
we know that, the viewers.
The viewers know that, but Skylar doesn't know it. And Jesse doesn't know it.
That was just negligence, too. Like, that was actually, like, he just didn't do this good thing, and then it led to this bad thing happening that killed all these other people. He's actually made some really bad choices over the chance of actually hurting people or covering it up or whatever. Here's one thing I was thinking when I was watching all this. Because I started to think about Hank, what his motives are now. Started to think about Jesse, what his motives are going forward. Started to think about and Walt, what his motives are. Not just what their motives are, but how they view what they do in order to achieve the ends that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. Now, at this point, Walt, I think that he actually doesn't see that he's done much wrong. Like, he knows that some of the acts that he's done are wrong. Like, you shouldn't blow up a building, and you shouldn't just be okay with a kid getting shot and then melt his body in acid or whatever it is that they do. But he actually sees that the nobility behind his actions of trying to, A, stay alive, because most of the series was him reacting to what he thinks that I'm going to get killed and my family's going to get killed, or trying to make money to leave for his family, you know, and to get the most money out of it. Obviously, major corruptions with power, narcissism, but he thinks that the nobility behind his actions excuses all the wrong that he does.
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that one.
Really? Yeah. I think that he actually thinks that.
No, he doesn't. He knows what he does is wrong, and the biggest piece that I have to prove that is when he's lying on the bathroom floor, he says, "Skylar, I know you talked to the cops, but it's fine. I'll turn myself in. I just want you to promise to give all the money to the kids. Please, quote unquote, don't let me have done all this for nothing." And when you say all of this, I mean, he poisoned a kid.
Yeah. No, that is true.
I don't think he thinks that poisoning a kid was good.
No, but I think he did see
it. And by the fly episode, with him and Jesse and the stupid fly.
Okay, so he's seeing that.
Which basically they lead you up for 45 minutes to this one scene of Walter being high on drugs and almost confessing to Jesse. I mean, he negligent. It was like negligent homicide what he did to Jane. He didn't just let it happen. He turned her over, and because of his turning her over, that's why she got sick. And then he didn't. He did it on purpose because he didn't want her in the picture anymore.
Well, he didn't save her on purpose, but he turned her over to get something, didn't he?
No, but he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he did.
Are we not forgetting that he's a genius?
Well,
he's
so,
like MacGyver.
All right, so that's a good point. You're right.
Exactly,
so he does know, and he does feel sorry, but he's been doing it. Would you agree at least that he's been doing it for what he thinks is a noble cause? That at least makes it okay to do the things, even if as long as he does that and he accepts responsibility if he's caught.
Not necessarily, because he kept doing it after he was had substantial means. He just wanted to be powerful. Like, did he kill Mike for good reasons? For noble causes? No, he killed him because he was mad that he didn't respect him.
That's true. So you think Walter sees this now? Like, and you think that him saying that when he was on the floor in this scene really means that?
I think Walter doesn't care because he knows he's going to die, but he still loves Walter Jr. for some reason, and he still loves Holly, and he wants them to have money, and he doesn't want it to all blow up if they could avoid it. He wants them to be well off in the best possible case scenario.
Okay. Well, I agree.
I think after he got cancer at the beginning of the season, because his new found – his cancer coming back that we've just learned about kind of mirrors, like you were saying, at the beginning of the show, where like he knows he's going to die and he's going to do all this stuff to tie up loose ends before he dies. So all this stuff that's happening now, he's doing it without any like regard for his own safety because he knows he's going to die. He doesn't care that Hank found out. A season ago, he might have cared. Now he doesn't care. Now he's just going to be like, screw you. You're not going to get me in jail. I'm going to die anyway. Do whatever you want to do. And he's willing to turn himself into Scott. He's willing to turn himself into his own Skyler, gives him the money because the money is like the one good thing that he still has.
Well, there's another scene here that actually made me think that Walter, there's some goodness left in Walter. And that was when Saul recommends that he sends Hank on a trip to Belize, which is actually one of my favorite euphemisms. I wish I'd used Twitter like last night, but I watched it today, so I didn't get to do it last night.
Was that trending on Twitter?
I don't know, but like I wish I was on it and like could have seen like
they actually had the hashtag "Am I under arrest?"
Yeah.
On the commercial.
But I think trip to Belize was a way better.
Like Mike did. Way better. But, like Mike did on a trip to Belize. You sent him on a trip to Belize.
But Walt says, no, I'm not going to do that. Are you crazy? That's
family. Yeah, I thought that was weird.
That's family.
I thought that was a little bit unbelievable. Like, why would Walt just kill eight guys that he didn't even know?
Walter is different now.
This guy is trying to expose him. He told him to rot in hell.
What's funny is that he's different. I'm saying he's different now, but I know full well that later on he's got a machine gun and he's running and his name is known across the land as, like, the most evil meth dealer. Never stalk the earth.
Well, that brings us to Jesse, because how does he get found out? At the end of this episode, we have Hank walking into the interrogation room with Jesse. And, you know, we didn't really get to in last week's podcast about Jesse throwing the money at the window, but that actually served a purpose because it led to him getting arrested. He was throwing the money out indiscriminately, and the guy found the money, and he found...
Well, that's what I thought was going to happen. No matter what I thought was, here's what's going to happen when Jesse throws money out. Somebody's going to start spending this money. Like, some bum is all of a sudden going to have an insane amount of money, and that's going to, like, whoa, hello, buttons flashing 50s. You know, they're going to take that guy in, and they're going to find out where he got it from. And Jesse obviously wasn't being very careful. But at the beginning of the episode, we found his car parked with the blinker still on in a park, while he was just laying on a merry-go-round in a really, really nice moment of cinematography. The camera work and also the sound that they were using of the creaking. It started off kind of like you don't know what it is, and as you get close, you're like,
oh. Those merry-go-rounds are creepy.
They are. They're very creepy. But Jesse doesn't care, and throwing the money out the window was obviously a sign that he doesn't care. But now he's, like, caught. So how much does he care now? He didn't say one word this entire episode. Between the teaser opener where he was in the playground, and then the ending where he was in the interrogation room. Not one word. Yeah. Still, Aaron Paul admitted more than RJ Mitt ever has.
Yeah, screw you, RJ Mitt. You suck.
Yeah, you're going to be unemployed soon. How does that feel? In this economy, there's not a lot of work for actors with mild cerebral palsy. I'm sorry, but...
Wish you had the thing right there.
I know. We don't have it here. So what do you think? Now, what I'm seeing, though, why is Jesse here? Why is he in this position where he did all this? And I think it's because he sees all the wrong that he's done with Mr. White and listening to him. And he's just completely suffering from it. Like, to the point of mental anguish where I don't think he cares if he lives or dies. But more serious than the earlier doesn't care if he lives or dies junkie Jesse.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't that Jesse.
This is a pretty serious guilt situation.
Yeah.
He cannot stop himself from thinking about the kid on the dirt bike. Or...
Now, he's tried to stop Walt most of his time. At least try to keep him from...
Yeah.
And now he's here, where he just can't live with himself.
And that's why I am postulating...
Do you think he tells?
That Jesse is going to flip because he doesn't care anymore. He doesn't have any... You know, before... Jesse was a guy that you thought would never flip no matter what. He actually had gotten arrested a bunch of times. And, you know, screw you and this and that. But what does he have to lose? The guy is completely just a vapid, soulless, just cavernous shell of his former self. And they end the episode. They're not misleading us this season.
No.
They end the episode with Hank walking into the interrogation room. Clearly, as soon as Hank says, I know it was Mr. White.
Well, we don't know that.
I think I do know that.
I don't think it's exactly going to happen. There's going
right
to be
now.
Well, okay. There's going to be a lot of back and forth.
Because he hates Hank.
He hates Hank.
So he's going
to
be like,
and he doesn't want to give Hank the satisfaction of catching them, I don't think. He doesn't want Hank to do it. I think he knows that Walter White, well, like at some point Walt's going to tell Jesse I'm actually dying again. And we're going to have this like, did he already tell him that the other one? Did he say I have cancer again?
I don't think so.
No, but he got the phone call. That's what it was. Walt got the phone call, or he talked to Jesse when he was, or he got the phone call from Saul in the last episode that he needed to go over there to deliver the money back when he was getting treatment. But Jesse doesn't know, so I think he might make him feel bad again, and maybe then Jesse's not going to believe him or something, and then maybe he will flip, or he believes him and just doesn't flip because he's like, he's going to die anyway.
Well, look, we already have these future scenes, okay?
Yeah.
We already know he's exposed. How could he have been exposed? If it's not Jesse, then how?
I don't know. I think police is a Hank is a really good policeman, which we've been told pretty much since the beginning.
Yeah, but he's already been looking through all this stuff. I think
new
Jesse.
Evidence.
I think Jesse talks.
Evidence.
I think Jesse's in jail. Hank is on the run. And
now,
whatever.
We talked about the nobility that I thought that Walt thought he had, and as you rightfully put out, he knows he's done wrong. You know, he knows what he did is wrong, and he's willing to, if he's willing to give himself up, he knows that all this stuff is bad. But now, why do you think Hank views himself? Because Hank is starting to get into an obsessed territory where he's really out for vengeance when it really comes like, down to it. It's like he wants Walt to go down because Walt misled him. It's not just because he was out to get Heisenberg. It's because Heisenberg was Walt.
Yeah.
And, like, he didn't know it. It's almost like he's mad because he couldn't put the pieces together himself earlier.
Yeah, it totally changes the whole...
So do you think this makes Hank, I started to root for Hank. I was like, all right, you know, like, you're going to get yours. You're going to get your, you know, like, the credit you deserve. But then here, I'm like, I don't know if I root for him anymore.
Well, I mean, it changes the dynamic of Walt pursuing the case. Because now... Right,
Hank.
It doesn't become...
Hank pursuing the case.
Hank pursuing the case. Because
so
it,
easy. Hank and Walt.
Hank
the worst
and Walt.
Names.
Like, that's terrible names.
Henry. Well, let's call him Henry.
But, you know, we're not going to talk about any, like, bad writer decisions this
no,
week.
No,
we're just going to, you know, we're just going to take a week off. Give
okay.
him a break.
So it changes the dynamic, you were saying, of him pursuing the case.
Yeah, because initially he just wanted to catch the guy. But now that he finds out that it's his own brother-in-law, it's just... It's so much more personal. He wants him to suffer. Like, he knows that you have this scene that with Marie. As soon as I mention, as soon as I, like, turn this case in, I'm done.
Like, because he's going to be that guy.
It's so embarrassing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already punched him in the face. What more can he do to the guy?
He's got to put him away and show everyone that that's who Heisenberg was. For one thing, because people don't even believe that Hank was ever. Could have ever got it was. I think Hank became a little bit of a joke with Heisenberg a little bit because he became so obsessed, and yet they never got close to.
Yeah, they were never like on his team with the Pollos Hermanos thing.
No, exactly, and like that, so, I think that there's that too. But you notice that the rage subsided in Hank. He's not rageful anymore. He is now pursuing this coolly and calmly. Like, he even says to Marie, when she says, why don't you go tell everyone over there, the DEA, he says, I want to make sure that I've got the proof, not just suspicion. Because he knows that they're going to kind of laugh him away.
But then they set up that conference call.
I think Marie talks him out of it. And that's what the theme of the episode is. These women now have taken such huge... She talks...
It's like Marie versus Skyler.
Marie, it's family versus family. It's become that, which is funny. And this is where something I was thinking about was, if I got to choose now sides... If I got to choose this Hank Marie side or Skyler and Walt, who do I choose? Who do you choose?
I choose
go first.
Well, Let's put it this way.
If you want one of them to win, like one's bent on vengeance and justice, and the other one is vengeance-fueled justice, I'd say, and the other one is trying to survive, but they've done some really terrible things.
As a mailman who works in the hood and has cops pulling up to me nonstop asking me, do I know who lives at this address? Do I know who lives at this address?
Ooh, Jeff, are you going to admit something here?
And me saying, no, I've never done this route before, even though I know exactly. No, screw Hank and screw Marie, okay? Marie is a whack job, and Hank is a total buffoon, okay? Not that I'm saying that I endorse what Walt has done, especially when he poisoned Brock and when he didn't let Jesse leave without giving him his money and all that stuff. But, come on, like, Skyler and Walt are such a more sympathetic couple than Hank and Marie.
They are, and that's where I get torn here, because I'm like, well, you're basically choosing between the murderous meth cooking, which just poisons society, let's be honest, you know, like, they're versus, you know, like, they're not good either, Marie. Like, Hank is just full of himself, and full of ego, and full of, he's narcissistic. You know, he's got his own beer, Hank's beer, whatever what it was called.
Schrader Brown.
Schrader Brown, okay.
Schrader Brown.
Like, and she, I mean, well, like, oh, I'm going to go around and start stealing everything. Like, they're not good people. They're kind of douches.
They're
and
very
they,
douchey.
They look down on Walt and Skyler, and they did before, like, we ever even entered the picture. Like, they since the pilot, they kind of look down on them a little bit. So
a lot.
So now when it's here, when it's like you're choosing, I'm like, fuck Hank and Marie.
Fuck Hank and Marie, man. If Hank weren't a cop, Marie would be in jail.
That's true.
She is a criminal.
She is a criminal. Yeah. Yeah, and Hank's technically a criminal, too. Because he has stormed into people's houses and punched them in the face and put them in the hospital.
Yeah, he should have gone away for Jesse's thing. I mean, if Walt didn't actually have feelings of friendship toward Jesse, then he could have just let Jesse sue Hank, and Hank would have gotten fired, and everything would have been fine, and Gail would still be alive. And Gus would still be alive. You see what I'm saying? It's not like a black and white type situation.
No, it's gray, and that's what the entire show is. It's grays, which we've gotten into before. We beat ourselves a lot, I find, and that's okay. Because, you know what? It matters. Repeating
it
matters. Now, I mean, is there anything else really with Breaking Bad? We've gone over it. Hey, we're still talking about Breaking Bad, so check back in like 5 minutes. Now...
Yes, it's the 46th minute. 47th minute, you can officially turn back in because we're going to switch gears now.
No, we're not actually. Because here's... now, this episode obviously was just kind of arranging everything, getting it lined up. Things are going into place for this, what it seems like a sprint. So, do you think anyone's like holding cards that like has a better chance here now that you've seen what we're up against? As far as you got Jesse, you got Hank Marie, Walter and Skyler.
Well, Walter has a zillion billion dollars in the desert.
Yeah.
Skyler
and
is
a lottery ticket coordinates.
Skyler is fairly confident that they don't have any evidence against her. And that's why I'm thinking that this Hank Jesse interrogation scene is going to dominate next week's episode. Because
the name of the episode next time is called Confessions. And
well, there you go.
I saw a sneak peek on Talking Bad, which you guys should check out that if you can. It actually replays later, too, so you can set your DVR, tape it if you miss it. But Vince Gilligan gave a little, like, he said a little blurb and then showed, like, a still. Didn't show, like, a scene or anything, because I guess it's, like, security super tight for these last episodes. Just they're not giving much out. And pretty much it's, they go out to eat, and it's Walter and Skyler at a table. It looked like they were saying something about guacamole. It's like a Mexican restaurant. And there's two people, there's two empty seats across from them. And he's like, oh, they will be filled. So, I mean, right here I'm thinking, so we have all four of them at a table? The next
something.
Episode? And the name of it's Confessions. So it's either Jesse confesses or...
Maybe Hank, Marie, Skyler, and Walt all become good friends again. They just kind of think, you know, this is what happened. I'm sorry. I was in a really tough place in my life.
And then Walt
decides
that he's just going to take off and change his name and dye his hair.
And this is probably all mediated by Walter Jr.
Of course.
Because, I mean, how can you let this kid just, like, wait in the wayside...
While they go eat? While they have guacamole?
Fight each other. I mean, come on, man. It's all about the kids. It's all about Holly. First, how stupid was that scene where Marie picks up the baby and tries to leave the house?
Oh, that was brutal. And it was like that was another scene that when I went, this is jarring. This is something that would happen when someone finds out about this. It felt very real. People's reactions felt true to the characters each and every time we get a little bit closer here.
Yeah.
So that's great. You want to switch it up here? You want to switch from gears to talking about some other stuff? What you want to talk about, buddy? We got time. We got a little bit of time left. We could talk about the newsroom, which I don't know. Spoilers ahead for that, maybe, or
yes. In case you've clicked on this podcast at the exact moment that we stopped talking about Breaking Bad.
Okay, fine. Well, then let's go to some safe stuff here. How's that?
All right. Well, how about I give you guys the postal tip of the week?
Oh yes. You know what? I think that's something we could work into our weekly podcast.
Courtesy of the mailman, your postal tip of the week is: if you live in a multifamily house or an apartment building, be sure to include the apartment number on your mail, okay? If you live at, say...
People don't do that?
No, they don't.
Wow.
They just... All right, let's just pick like a random... Like Empire State Building. You live at one Empire State Building.
Yep.
Josh Richer, one Empire State Building.
I wish.
New York City. And we're just supposed to find you. There's like 1,000 billion people who live at the Empire State Building. You got to put a suite number, you people. Like, seriously.
I got to check on that.
It is just...
I don't know about residents.
It is just as important as this street address. I live at 1 Douchebag Lane. 1 Douchebag Lane, apartment 207. Then you'll get your mail. Otherwise, screw it. We're sending it back. Idiots. Like, how are we supposed to find it? And that has been your postal tip of the night. Brought to you by yours truly, Jeff Machado, the mailman.
Now, for future reference, and nobody's listening, so we can talk about this sort of thing. Maybe I should say.
Why do you keep saying no one's listening? People are clearly listening.
If you're listening, could you let us know? Could you like hit us up on Twitter or email us at our
at @MashadDouche @
I think I'm at Joshua Richard. I don't know if you've
you don't even
follow
know
this
your own,
page. You probably read the thing.
You don't even know your Twitter address.
It's @ Joshua Richard.
@ Joshua Richard.
Yeah, that's my name, Joshua Richard.
I think that's right.
Whatever. Well, a couple corrections here before we wrap things up. Talk about what I think we should, which is the summer song.
Summer song of the summer.
Before I get there, let's check a couple of things.
Department of Redundancy Department.
Now, the director of this episode was not Bryan Cranston. It was actually Michelle MacLaren, who has also... directed episodes for Game of Thrones, both next season and also The Second Sons from this past season. She has done Hell on Wheels, Guts episode of Walking Dead, which was great. You haven't seen it because you're afraid of stuff.
I'm afraid of stuff.
You're afraid of stuff. And also The X-Files. So she's done like quite a bit of...
There was a lot of low angle shots in this episode. I'm not a big fan of that stuff.
Well, they also had that wonderful shot where when he was smashing... the GPS or to get the coordinates, and it was like from underneath the glass of him smashing it. And also that weird shot where he was in the kitchen and Skyler opened up the hallway door and they panned from behind him all the way around, so then you were on the other side of Walt and you could see down the hallway with Skyler in the bedroom and Walt was just
yeah.
I'm not a fan.
I don't like to see the director when I watch something, you know. I just want to kind of watch it.
I'm trying to see if there's any residences in the Empire State Building because, I guess
it's mostly a business. That's not the point. That's why I changed it to 1 Douchebag Lane.
It made me wonder because I've never
Josh Richer, 1 Douchebag Lane.
Yeah, I guess I'm a douche for trying
no
to
apartment.
Look that up.
Just find me.
All right, so Jeff.
There's 47 floors.
Guys, there's no more spoilers. It's fun. We're on the other side of them. So hopefully you caught back up. So one thing I always
the summer
like to think
song
about every year,
of the summer.
Yeah, what's the summer song of the summer? There's an obvious answer, but there's some other ones that you can make arguments for because the summer is so long. There tends to be songs that both start at the beginning and build up steam, and then they're big at the end. Stuff that just is hot right away, and stuff that's kind of big at the end, and then big at the beginning of the summer, and then kind of by the end you're like, oh, that's okay, but I'm kind of done with it.
All right. Well, they have this thing in the NFL where it's all about comps.
Okay.
They call that comparison. It's like a shortened thing. It's like a new thing. They got this new lingo now in the NFL. They were talking to Robert Griffin. How are you feeling now? like, are you going to be able to take hits? The guy just blew out his ACL. He's like, oh, I'm just going on comps. That means compared to how I felt last year at this time. First of all, how can you possibly remember that? Anyway, the point is, let's compare this summer's music list to last summer's music list, which had a clear, no doubt, song of the summer of the summer. Call Me Maybe.
Yeah, that was clear.
That was
some people might not say that. We're kind of weird. No, that was the song of the summer.
I challenge anybody to say that there was any other song of last summer than Call Me Maybe. I mean, me and Josh in Philadelphia at a karaoke bar, DJ playing Call Me Maybe in between every single song.
It did. But that was the peak. That was the peak.
That was the peak.
June. It carried through to the end of that summer. It actually got bigger by the time like August came. I think it was like...
It was getting there.
Saturated to a point.
Point is there a song right now that could possibly even have the chance to be played an entire night?
Yes.
On a Friday night?
Yes.
And what is it?
It's Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke featuring
Absolutely.
Pharrell.
Absolutely.
Well,
it's not even something that we can really argue.
You can't really argue that. Like, it's that song. But there's been a couple other songs that that's probably going to be the summer song until this one came out. It was just everywhere with that bass line. At first I didn't even like that song at all.
Really?
I didn't like it at all when I first heard it. I was like, oh, this is boring. Because, you know, because Disco to me was something like, you know, I liked a lot earlier in life. And then, like, somewhere where I got big in indie rock in, like, 2003 with the disco beats, like, I was, like, really into it, you know. But, like, at this point I was like, I don't really feel... But I'm a hypocrite, you see, because the song before that to me was the song of the summer... was Get Lucky by Daft Punk, also featuring Pharrell, and also pretty much a disco song.
Yeah, it's a very disco summer.
It's a very disco summer. And I can't figure out why. I've been trying desperately, because as someone who considers themselves a student of, like, culture and, like, trends in culture, trying to figure out, like, the way that nostalgia works is something that I dedicate a lot of my time to. And I'm like, how do we end up back at disco?
Well, it's not disco like 70s disco. It's kind of like a combination of like
Blurred Lines. You're right. I guess Justin
Future
Timberlake,
Sex. It's kind of got that kind of vibe.
Justin Timberlake kind of opened the door for that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a poppy kind of disco.
That's true.
It doesn't have the same like I don't know. It doesn't have the same weird instrumental qualities as a 70s disco.
They're all about sex too.
Yeah, they're all about sex.
They're all about sex. Call Me Maybe wasn't. Well, I guess it was. She wanted to have sex with that guy.
About Safe and Sound? Is that about sex?
Safe and Sound. See, that's the other song I think that song has been fueling all summer. It's been just, it started off in like alternative stations, and then it became that crossover hit that just like...
Yeah, it's bleeding out to the pop.
Bleeding out
the
by the end
stations.
Of the summer. It's just been getting bigger and bigger, as opposed to Blurred Lines, which just, I think, was huge within 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. But Safe Sound, I don't think, is about sex. But you know what it is. That's
Anna's son. What's that about?
Which one's that?
Oh, Anna's son. But do you know this house is falling apart? What can
know.
I say this? Well, I guess it's not the song of the summer if you haven't heard it.
No, I haven't heard of it. But now, have you heard that Jason Derulo song? That one where he says, take me to the other side? And, like, sparks fly like the 4th of July.
Can I get, like, a melody while you say the words?
No.
Wow.
Well, tonight, take me to the other side. Sparks fly like the 4th of July.
No, actually.
The good news is nobody hears this. So nobody heard that.
Stop saying that. There are so many people out there listening.
I hope so. Again, if you're out there, just let us know. But that song, this Jason Derulo song to me is even weirder because it's like a song about like, becoming, not being friends anymore and going to the other side, which you assume is like doing it. And it talks about like, I see that sexy look in your eyes and I know we ain't friends anymore. If we walk down this road, we'll be lovers for sure. So tonight, kiss me like it's do or die and take me to the other side. That's that weird song that kids are definitely losing their virginity to. Somebody's setting the mood with that song. That's like... That's the weird entry into the summer songs, which you're like, is this appropriate?
Well,
Blurred Lines is a sexual in an adult way, but this kind of seems like in a weird, like...
I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, kids are losing their virginity much earlier these days. It's like the porn on the internet stuff. You know, they tried to do a study.
They ruined it. They ruined...
They tried to do a study about how watching porn on the internet affects your adolescence. But they couldn't find a control group. They couldn't find anyone younger than 15 who had never seen porn on the internet.
Oh, that's really sad.
So they're never going to be able to know.
That is the saddest thing ever.
Welcome to the next age, America.
It's horrible. It's a horrible age.
Cats and dogs living together. Oh. Mass hysteria.
So I think that wraps up. I think that pretty much wraps up this week's edition of Richer and the Mailman. Hopefully we delivered. Eh?
Yeah, hopefully we delivered because like it's like the mail, like how the mail gets delivered.
Well, we did do a segment where you gave a tip about apartment numbers.
Stay tuned next week for your postal tip of the week. For your Breaking Bad recap. And maybe we'll get into a little bit of the newsroom. Because this whole Operation Genoa thing is really coming.
Oh, home. Operation Genoa. Don't say anything. We didn't say spoilers.
Spoilers.
Operation Genoa. What's
we're not
happening?
We're not spoiling anything. The whole season's about Operation Genoa. We might talk about it next week. And we're also going to keep tabs on the disco / pop / summer hit / sex songs.
I think it's over.
Of the thing. What's over?
I think the debate is over about that. But either way, we'll see you next week. And once again, hit us up on Twitter. That's at @MashadDouche. It's at Joshua Richer. Or you can hit us up on, whatever. Or our email at placetobenation.com.
Peace, bitch.